don't get her as frequently as perhaps you would have liked, except on her landline. So that's just for the record, she's just simply not available on her cell today. But for the rest of us, it is a good opening and welcome. Lovely bit of sunshine without gridlock this morning. We're all here and everyone on time. So we just got a few apologies. The long-standing medical apology from Ariane Ambrosini. I certainly was in communication with him yesterday briefly, following your advice, Honorable James. And Honorable Salah will be arriving late. I forget the reason. It was a medical one, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, and then he needed to leave at 12 for a committee. I'm not aware of any other apologies. And yes, Honorable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I have to leave at almost 11, but I'll come back if you had afterwards.
Now, before we move into the adoption of the agenda, I want to just point out a couple of things that have arisen on the programme. And I need to say this right now. The legal metrology bill, which some of you have been part of these public hearings, have become aware, I'm sure, that this is not a simple technical bill, that certainly that was our perception of matters. It is far more complicated than we realized, and therefore it is not something that's going to be over and done with in one or two days. It's something that is quite extended, in fact. And we've now had to take account of that in the program itself. And yes, indeed, the DTI will be coming to us right now, as they are, and that is today being Wednesday. And although it's not on this, but is noted on the agenda, we are dealing with the first draft. It is actually not so much a first draft of the BRRR report, but it is a consolidation of information. And that in itself has saved you a lot of work, because all the information is now there. I think that's how I understand it, Miss Hurley. Yeah. And what can only be called a very raw draft, because I also understand that the Hansards are not yet available, you see. So that is why you need this, to get to grips with it. But the challenge is that the deadline is Friday. So, having already extended today's meeting to accommodate this, and I have, we can't keep on postponing the private members bill either, you know, that has to be kept in the loop. We're going to have to meet, because we want to retain the private members bill, of course, on the Friday. We're going to have to meet at some point tomorrow afternoon. Now, I would really like earnestly to appeal to members. It's in all our interest to process these bills as speedily as possible and not keep on extending the Friday. You know, all of us have commitments later on that afternoon and evening, etc. So my proposal is that on Thursday, I would like you to earnestly consider this, that we meet at 2:30 or so until 4:30. Now, I'm not expecting a decision as right now. I want you to think about it. It's either that, or we meet Thursday night, and I really think it's not suitable. Why don't I say Thursday morning? Not because there is a caucus. I don't think there are any caucuses on at the moment, but because the staff need to finalise this document after we've dealt with it today. And they need a full morning. So I want you to think of all those things, and we're definitely taking that decision, members, at tea time, Mr. Hurlings. And on that note, Ms. Hurling, you are released. It's not not as if we've jailed her, but although she may feel as if she's been imprisoned in this sort of workload. She's on parole from the committee. All right. On that note, please, I'd like the decision at 11 on Thursday. I also had a request, Mr. James, about, Honourable James, about your own, the private member's bill, which came not via you, but well, by the secretary, committee secretary, I understand you spoke to him, communicated with him. And you were hoping to get, you know, you're sure that your bill could be heard at about 11 or 12 or something like that. What was the exact issue on Friday?
It's simply, Madam Chair, that it would be better if we scheduled it second during the morning, because our chief legal advisor is unable to get here at 9 o'clock.
All right, so that's fine then. You know, we'll start off with legal metrology at 9, and then we would take account of the protection of knowledge bill. Is that it? Private members bill. At about, it would be at about 11 o'clock then. All right, thank you. So, now back to the adoption of the agenda. We have someone to propose adoption. Thank you, Honourable Wiley. How are you feeling this morning? All right, well, pop down to the clinic if you want to. It's just downstairs on the ground floor. No, I mean, quite seriously. Yeah. All right, and then seconded by Honourable Jordan. Is that Jordan Hill Lewis who seconded? Honourable James seconded it. Right. And then we're able to. Where did the DTI go to? Ah, right here. Yeah. Okay. No. So we then do have the DTI. We've got our chief. Is it the chief director, Dr. Sengay Damana?
Yes.
It is yourself, yes. We'll first recognise, though, the acting deputy director general, Industrial Policy Development Division, Mr. Garth Strachan, senior manager inspections, NRCS, yourself, Mr. Jaco Monovic, Dr. Sengay Damana, Technical Infrastructure, Chief Director, Ms. Anna Marie Lotta, Director, Technical Infrastructure, Ms. Jacqueline, Mr. Amos Bele. Favorite color you're wearing today, orange. Deputy Director, Technical Infrastructure, Ms. Jacqueline Rapala, Assistant Director, Technical Infrastructure, and Advocate Stridham. Right, okay, and then we have Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, that's from our Constitutional and Legal Services, and we also have with her Dr. B. Lewis, Parliamentary Legal Advisor. Where is Ms. Lewis? Oh, Dr. Lewis. Right, we've got quite a few doctors today, yes. All right. Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, Advocate Hoor. Thank you. And Advocate Nsenge, Senior Lead. Right. Oh, yes, there we are. Right, now you're all acknowledged. I'm not going to be repeating that again. And, Honourable Thring and Honourable Anton Albert, I hope you'll be accepting my invitation to you for this evening. Yes, no. And that you can ask your respective parties just to relieve you of any deployment. Thank you very much. Okay. Right, now back to basics. Yourself, please, Dr. Singer, DTI.
Good morning,
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, for the opportunity to respond to the public hearing that we had yesterday. I'll just jump right into our responses. The purpose, obviously, is just to respond to what we had yesterday. As the delegation has already been mentioned, I won't go through it. I'll move right away to what we want to say. I think for a start, I can just say that we are not going to respond to all the issues that have been raised because some policy issues, they need that we apply our minds today and tomorrow and come back on Friday after consulting with the state law advisors for us to have a comprehensive response. So those will defer to Friday. But however, we are able to respond to quite a number of issues that have been raised. Just by way of background, trade metrology, the weights and measure system in South Africa dates back to 1982 from the Johannesburg municipality where it started. Since 1973, it has been dealt with under the auspices of the Department of Trade and Industry. In 1991, this function was transferred to the South African Bureau of Standards. And then in 2008, the National Regulator for Comparable Specifications was formed, and this role then moved to the regulator, where it is now a division. On its own. Trade metrology is the entirety of the legislative, administrative and technical procedures that are established by the Trade Metrology Act and Regulation, that's the current act, and it's implemented in order to specify and ensure in a regulatory or contractual manner the appropriate quality and credibility of measurements related to trade transactions, where a measuring instrument is the basis for such transactions. There are a number of examples that one can cite. The sale of prepacked goods where scale or volume measurements are used. So we have products such as prepacked parcels, meat, meals. We also have beer, prepacked and milk. The sale of petrol also requires that it be regulated under trade metrology. Liquid fuel dispensers have to be regularly calibrated. And also sales in front of customers at retail stores where they have to measure first before you get your product. Now, moving on to legal metrology. Basically, legal metrology is trade metrology plus. Plus in the sense that in addition to trade, we have to now deal with health, safety and environmental issues in measurement. So, yeah, so it's an expansion. I think I should just leave it at that and move over to the reason we are here today, which is to respond to the issues that have been raised. So the way that we have set up the response is just first mention what issue was raised by whom and then how we are responding. So the first issue that was raised was from ITG, a comment there, talked to clarifying to what extent the bill impacts on the health industry. As I've already said, legal metrology is an expansion and it moves to include also health and environment. So the way this is impacted, where legal metrology technical regulation refers to health measurements of products such as blood pressure monitors, thermometers, etc. In the current act, which is the Trade Metrology Act, impact is derived from the fact that the current act applies to pre-packed medicines such as cough mixtures, bandages, and dressing. These already have to comply with the labeling requirements of the current act and the accuracy requirements of the current act. So that's how the impact is. As an example, we see that a number of medical devices that are the way they work is based on measurement are actually regulated under the Legal Metrology Act, under Legal Metrology, which is where we want to move to. So we have syringes, blood pressure monitors, baby scales also, yeah. And I think that these are the few examples that one can give in the area of health. The next comment is from Clef Gale. Their comment is that the NRCS is understaffed and again under-resourced to enforce the existing legislation. It also does not have the necessary inspection facilities to ensure legal compliance. Our response is that we do acknowledge the concern from industry regarding the staffing and funding of the NRCS. We note, however, that the NRCS was established in 2008, so it's still a new baby on the block, and therefore there is room for expansion. We feel that the bill provides for a new financing model that will put the NRCS in a position to fulfill its mandate much better. The next comment from NWA and SASCO, where they feel that the definition of measuring instruments should include software. Without reading the comments that they have made, where they include software in the definition in relevant areas, the DTI feels that this is actually correct. So DTI agrees that this definition should be changed accordingly. Now moving on to the next comment from AS. AS feels that the definition should be amended to persons responsible for repairs. That means any person who repairs a measuring instrument in accordance with the provisions of Section 9, 10, and 27. Responding to this, we feel that we do not agree that Section 9 should be referenced. If we have to change this definition, we would rather change it to say that it means any person registered in terms of Section 10 to repair a measuring instrument in terms of Section 27. So we don't agree with AS in this case that they must refer to Section 9, and if we really have to change, we would rather go with our statement there. The other comment from JVPS asking whether a person referred to an individual or an organization. Our response is that it refers to an individual as the organization are designated as a repair body. So in the bill it says that a repair body, meaning an organization. So the other one must be an individual. Moving on to a comment from SACS from Clause 4. The regulator should not be involved in verifying measuring instruments, as this can result in a conflict of interest. Rather, it should focus on supervising laboratories and end users in the industry, etc. terms of small and distant rural towns where they are not served by private sector players. And we also do not agree because industry does not cover the whole scope of measurements that need to be done. We know, for instance, that for torque measures, industry doesn't really want to do that work. So the regulator has to do it. We encourage industry to serve the market as well as they can. We can add that the fees that the NRCS charges are not market related, but they are discussed on an annual basis with the industry, and I think that consultation can be strengthened. Comment from SACF on market surveillance inspectors inspection. They feel that the new function can be very dangerous, as the person appointed by the CEO of the NRCS may be related or even have an interest in the party or function it must inspect. The complete function and purpose of the section must be renegotiated to avoid a conflict of interest or the disclosure of sensitive information or records to competitors. Our response is that, to clarify, this is not a new function, as it talks to the appointment of NRCS staff as market surveillance inspector. Provision is also made to appoint another organ of state in order to not duplicate market surveillance work where it already exists. The NERSA do inspect electricity meters currently, so we won't want to duplicate that. So we don't agree. Clause 9, designation of repair bodies. AS commented that it's unclear why all repair bodies should be designated by the executive officer. I think the response is it was decided that all repairers should register so that the NRCS have control over rogue and fly-by-night repairers who repaired measuring instruments without following the rules, such as the obliteration of the verification mark. This may happen in the registration process. Bear in mind that the definition of repair excludes repairs that do not change the metrological integrity of the measuring instrument. I think it's also important that the coverage of the bill is quite wide, so it's important for the regulator to know who are the players in the field. Clause 10, registration of persons responsible for repairs. AS comments text that the chief executive officer may, in the prescribed manner, register any person with the prescribed competencies and this is the addition, who wishes to issue a guarantee as provided for in section 27(2)(b). As the person responsible for repairs of any particular kind in accordance with this act. Further, the chief executive officer must furnish a person registered under section 1 with a certificate stating that such person may undertake repairs in terms of the act. Our response is that we don't agree. In this case, it is more important to register the person as he or she must know that he or she the incubate complying with all type approval requirements and not fit unapproved components which might not be picked up during the verification process. Okay, I'm going to move on.
13 of certain importers, manufacturers, and persons who offer for sale any instrument, product, or service. And this comment is from Woolworth and SAGI. The proposal to register all products will place an administrative burden on retailers, as their systems are not geared for this. Any related costs will also negatively impact on consumers. Our response is that the proposal is to register only manufacturers and importers or retailers, and it's not to register every single product.
As their comment implies that every single product must be registered. And it's not so. Clause 12 on the advisory forum, a comment from Samsung. The establishment of an advisory forum by the minister will provide a major improvement. Consumer interest should be adequately and directly represented in the forum. We agree. Clause 13, comment from Tiger, subsection 1C, they want clarity on the interstate services and fees that will be charged. Our response is that there are already fees charged under the current system for services that are rendered. Measurement for prescribed capsules effected in terms of certain measuring instruments and by means of verified measuring instruments. Saji comment that subsection 1, that under this provision it is an offense to make an incorrect statement. And they give a diagram or general plan for the sale of land as an example. However, if the tolerance is set in subsection 2 differ from those allowed in the Land Survey Act, specifically are higher than those set in the Land Survey Act, this will compromise the function of the property system. We feel that this issue should be dealt with in a regulation. We are, however, hesitant to mention in this act or this bill a specific act, because we may not be comprehensive. So this is an issue that should be addressed in a regulation. Clause 43, laws to be amended. Some could comment that amendment of section 11 of the NRCS Act on specialist committees can provide good independent advice on a number of serious issues facing the NRCS that significantly impact on consumers. We agree with them that specialist committees can do just that. And then, so from those comments, we didn't cover all the comments that were raised by the various organizations, because we are deferring some of them to Friday. Now we are moving on to comments that were raised by the parliamentary legal advisor. And in this case also, I'm not going to cover all of them, but I'll cover some. So the first one was on the long title, clause 15, where the question is on regulation. And we do agree that there are two types of regulations that are being referred to. There's the administrative regulation, and then there are legal metrology technical regulations for a particular kind of instrument. So yeah, there's two categories, administrative and technical. Clause 3 asked whether the control of the minister, what it means. We
referring to the executive authority of the minister over the national regulator for compulsory certification, and the regulator administers the act. So it's the executive authority that's referred to. Clause 4, the functions are broad. I think that was the comment, that the functions that are referred to, the powers that are referred to are broad. So we our response is that the functions that are being referred to are in the legal metrology field. Since the powers that are being referred to are in the in this act, not every power.
I think this will require redrafting, so we are deferring it to Friday. 5B especially. Clause 8. We agree that subclause 2 should contain similar wording with respect to the competence requirement. One clause had competence and the other one did not, so we agree that we must change that. Clause 12, what does the balance of interest mean? By balance of interest, we mean a fair representation of all stakeholders on the advisory forum. So for example, members will come from manufacturers, importers, consumers, and labor organizations. Clause 13. Clause 1C is no, the other section 13.3.2 recommendation of the one that was confusing me. The recommendations will be from the national regulator, so we suggest that it stays the same there. Clause 15, agree that the consultation process can be prescribed in the bill. Yes, we agreed that. We agreed with that, so we will amend that. Clause 18, is asked who is going to do the destruction. So that is the NRS, the people that work at the NRS. The powers of surveillance inspectors, clause 22B, C, and D, is referring to the same thing. And then clause 20, we refer this to the state law advisors to look
21, the paragraph, some paragraph is very broad, and again we are looking at this with the state law advisor. So 26, okay, if an instrument is broken and it's beyond repair, the trader does not have to consult the NRPS before he throws it away. I think what we were referring to is to the intentional removal of the mark that shows that the instrument has been verified. But otherwise, if the instrument is not going to be used, there's no need to consult them with the NRPS. Reconsider. Yes, we will take this to state law advisor. So, clause 34. It's very broad. The clause is, it's broad because we want to include all eventualities. If there is no measurement taking place, there would not be a reason to prescribe a measuring unit. It must cover everything. It has to be so. 36 refers to the technical advisor at the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification. We are going to come up with a wording. Clause 36 talks to subclause E, includes the words deliver to purchaser.
Yeah.
From where? Why does A to D? The whole clause. We want to first go back with the technical advisor and find out why in one area they said deliver, and we where the other clauses refer to sale.
The point is this, I don't think you're giving us the explanation, you're wanting to defer it.
Let's
just say that, Deferred.
Deferred,
So now we're on 38.
We're on 38.
36.
Is there any other type of repairer? No. There's no other type of repairer. I think we over clarified in the bill. There's no other type.
And whenever you are making the comment, the members are sharing a private joke there, I see. I'm not sure if it's because the restaurant's Marco Hadebi or what, but. Don't instruct me now. But I think now the thing about the repairer, I hope that when you talk about, well, no, you agree there, that we actually do clarify it, you see, because the bill as it currently stands, there appears to be that sort of confusion. But anyway, members, now, it's a matter of getting immediately on to clause 38. We got your apology, Honourable Salam. Thank you. And now that we're all on 38.
On 38, it's just we use the word container and the word vessel. And
you know what I thought yesterday? That obviously the person who used container was living in the 21st century. The one who had a reference to the vessel had a clerical background.
actually they are different as they're using the act. The vessel refers to something like a treasure vessel. Or a measure. So yeah, there's a slight difference in the two. So we'll keep going. Clause 41. Clause 41. We agree with the suggestions that were given that we should. Evidence can be subpoenaed. That's right. Required in terms of any law or as evidence in any court of law or upon court order or court subpoena. Court subpoena. And but the state law advisors will put it.
So we're going to
include
that with the state law advisor as well.
Yes. We do agree that.
The state law advisor, yeah.
Yes. Yes, clause 32, whether that clause was not contrary to the Labor Relations Act. And yes, we agree. They need to be alignment, and again, the state law advisors will make sure. Clause 2, schedule 2, 6.1, 6.2, two tenses. Schedule 2, clause 6.1, it has to be aligned with Labor Relations Act. 6.2, a person can be reappointed for 2 terms, each of 5 years, so a total of 10 years. Schedule 2, 6.3, alignment. We thought the clause was fine.
No, there did seem to be, I remember this issue came up yesterday, and the Honourable Randall Burma made reference to it. Do remember we were all there, and we were quite lively yesterday, maybe with the idea of getting cake for tea. anyway, our whole point was this, that this issue was explained, and Honourable Hill Lewis, I think your name was even raised in this regard by the Honourable Randall Burma, someone she was leaving as a legacy, as a lexicon, as it were, and grammar, and was to do with the chief executive and then not mentioning the word chief executive. Do you recall that? No. And that's what it is. Now you're saying, well, it isn't alignment. I don't think it is at all. See, it's kind of peppered and salted all over the place.
6.3.
Clause 3C. Clause supervised national regulation staff. The chief executive is responsible for that, and the 3C supervised. Then we get the chief executive and again here under, which is, it does seem though. Do you remember the issue of the chief executive coming up? Any of you remember that short memory loop?
No, we'll have to relook at it.
Well, don't say marble to this one.
Yes.
Let me be quite
serious. Yes, I think we will take it back.
Now, and then if you move on to the next one, Chief Director, are you now on item 3?
Item 3A, where we agree.
Yeah.
And then we go to 11.5, where we still agree. 11.6, we also agree. 11.7, yes, we agree. We wanted to start. 11.9, the numbering will have to be corrected. 12.1. This is a fair representation that we have talked to earlier. Yeah, so that's what we meant. 12.2. In 12.2, we are referring to 2 for us. There is an advisory and a technical forum, so there are two. Oh, okay, so that will be all of them, I think, that we have responded to. Then there are other issues that we're taking on Friday that are difficult, complex policy implications. The first one is the separation of repair and verification functions, and all the clause that talk to that will come back on Friday with a more comprehensive response of those two. Then the other one is the offences and penalties.
Yes.
The offences and penalties, we have looked at what other countries do. We want to come back with a response that categorizes the kind of contravention that can happen, and then suggest what kind of penalties we can put in place. Currently, we only have that the magistrate will decide on the fine, and a person can be imprisoned for up to 10 years.
Look, I wouldn't worry too much about that one. I think, the colleague is here from, is it SACS, the back here? Because I thought about it later, you should rather be worrying about lengthening the time that serial killers, the maximum there, not the other way around. I think we may stick to 10 or more, and then the serial killers, you better get a community sort of little signed petition to get this increased. As a minimum, you see? I think that's where you'll be moving in the community. Get that signed up. Let's not talk of reducing this one. But anyway, but you are going to be looking into that, because obviously we want to take cognizance of the East, West, North and South, what they've got to say about things, all right? Not just the West, of course. Now, yes, we're not over yet. We are going to take your hand, never fear. I just thought I'd make sure everyone was lively by the time we took your question, Honourable McIntosh.
I'm lively
enough. Yeah, and I know you will. Fine, your question or comment.
The question on the the question I wanted to raise is the penalty. If you look at the penalty, it's a maximum penalty. It doesn't prescribe to the court what it can do. The court may give a R500 or a R2000 fine, but there is a maximum penalty. We don't have a problem with that.
Exactly, that's what I was trying to point out. Right, now, let's talk about some comments here. I think what is quite clear is that DTI actually deferred a fair amount. They have also decided to engage with and ask the state law advisor, I think, to comment. Is that correct? And that's our understanding. So we should perhaps, in this case, I just thought that it may have been pertinent to have a mini break, because I know this room is not conducive to the application of the mind. So, is that perhaps... Yes, Honourable James?
Who is to be the judge chair of the quality of the application of the mind?
Yes. No, I think though, let's hear what the state law advisor has to say, as he has been referred to in some of these comments. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yes, it depends on which one. Let me just make sure. I can start with the with clause 5. The that was not totally replied to. Clause 5. I know it's not on the the list, but I just want to refer to that. Which we have discussed, I've discussed it with the parliamentary law advisors. Any power is very broad, but in this instance, the idea was that all the powers be could be delegated. But we have come to an agreement that the minister's power to make regulations would be excluded from the delegation, so there would be an amendment if the committee agrees, obviously. And then the question of sub-delegation, and if there's an exception, if it's explicitly in the law, it is allowed, you may sub-delegate, so that we will list, that is correct, there's no problem there. I see the clause 5 that they deferred to Friday. I just thought we could maybe get a head start, because we do agree that the parliamentary rule violates with me, or I with them. But I will then refer to clause 20. Clause 20.
Okay, you're saying that you agree with the parliamentary rule advice.
That we can exclude the minister's power to make the regulations. That,
right.
Would be, that is a usually what we do.
All right.
I agree with that.
Okay, next issue.
That's clause 20 from the page 12. That is a question of wording. Madam Chair, we will have to just maybe confer and see if we can better the wording. Obviously, when we drafted the bill, we were satisfied, but we can anything can be made clearer, so we can look at it again, that again. And that's a similar, I think, with clause 21E. Although, I can just explain, if you look at the bill, clause 21, it's on page 11, it's paragraph E.
Yes.
It says a person is guilty of an offence if that person fails to render any assistance that a market surveillance inspector, if so, fails to render any assistance to any market inspector, surveillance inspector, if so requested by the market surveillance inspector in terms of section 20 sub 9. Now, section 20 sub 9 says, sort of explain, says any person or any agent or employee of such person in charge of a measuring instrument, product or service that is being inspected by any market surveillance inspector referred to in subsection 1 must at the request of any such market surveillance inspector render such assistance as may be necessary for the purpose of the inspection by the market surveillance inspector. So it's specifically if it's necessary for the purposes of the inspection. So I'm not sure how we can better that, but we can have a look at it also and see if we can.
You know what worries me? You haven't had a chance to engage with the parliamentary legal advisor.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Our office is at the moment we're working on about 15 bills.
I won't tell you how many things we're working on. And I'd hate to say I gave that as an excuse to the Speaker.
I'm here, Madam Chair.
No. You know, we are also under the whip here. believe you me. And that is why we keep our hospitals in Cape Town full. But the thing is that we are very busy and we've got a deadline. We really have a deadline. And you know, all I've been hearing is deferment, postponement. Just now we're talking about posthumous or something. Now please, let's get some action.
Well, as soon as we have a chance, we will discuss the matter and come up with
that. The job soonest. Right, can you continue the advocate's work?
In Chippewa City, there is a similar situation. It's a sentence construction, Clause 33.
Yeah.
Subclause 2, it was reconsidered a sentence construction, so we'll just have to come up with a construction. If it's necessary.
Honourable Hill Lewis, in between the yogurt, have you had the chance to check these clauses yourself? And I'm saying this, you know, because I know that you apply your mind earnestly in the evening.
I can come up with a construction. I haven't done so yet.
Have a look at it during evening. Okay, Advocate Huang.
I think that is that's the sum total of the referrals.
Not according to the list I have, but perhaps there needed to be an engagement between DTI and yourselves. Maybe that is what the reference was. Was a chief director. I'm not sure if you were able to engage with the state law advisor yourself.
Not yesterday, but the plan is immediately after this meeting.
Immediately after you have finished, not this meeting, but when you have finished, yeah. Alright. Then I think, thank you, Advocate Huang. Let us go back to yourself, Advocate van der Merwe, and I know you've got probably 33 bills in front of you, but anyway.
Thank you, Madam G. I've worked through the responses from trade, and I've also we had a quick discussion this morning between the legal advisor for trade, the state law advisor, and myself, and we have agreed. There's nothing outstanding for me. My questions have been answered. I'm satisfied with the answers. There are a number of things that will have to be amended. And the agreement is that we will start doing an A-list this afternoon so that an A-list can be presented to the committee on Friday.
Yes. You know what's worrying me? There were a lot of points here, I think about 7 of them, where the word broad and vague were used. I'm using, you know, vague, broad, more or less the same thing, although not quite the same as vessels and containers. I've just looked that up in the dictionary. And you want to see they come out with 5 pages. God knows what the lay person's going to be thinking of. Yes. So, but let's leave that one alone. I think we're going to have to study that lexicon because simplicity is where we are going. No confusion. But the point I'm making, Advocate van der Merwe, is that you know this broad and vague. That seems to me to suggest to the committee we've got a bit of work here. What are we intending here? And that's where DTI needs to come in. What are you intending here? So that when we know what the intention is, we can craft it. Do you see where we're coming from? Just looking at our parliamentary liaison officer there. Right. Okay. So now the balance of interest was the one thing which I thought... you seem to think you had explained, Chief Director. And I didn't think it was an explanation at all.
You know, you think about
stakeholders and the like. Balance of interest. And certainly that's not what most people think of as a balance of interest. Is that the new phraseology in DTI?
sorry for my speaking, but
yeah, I think you
I think what we can do is to just explain to our state law advisors what we intended,
yes.
And then they can help us with the drafting.
Yeah. Now, look, members, you see, when we say we think this is complicated, quite clearly, the experts, both legal and technical, have come up against a mountain themselves, a complex one. It's not as simple as we thought at all. I'm not entirely satisfied with the throwaway explanation that technical and technical can mean two different things, can mean technical administration, you know, regulations, can be admin regulations, can be technical regulations. You know, when we talk about regulations here in this parliament, it means secondary legislation. That's all it means. So, and it's a serious thing to talk about regulations in a bill, you see, because what are you wanting to say? Then maybe you've got to talk about it and explain in a definition. Do you follow where I'm going to? You see, otherwise people are going to start looking at the secondary legislation, and it's not going to be there. All right. Now, members, I'm looking at our agenda here, and RT break is only due at 11, and we have consideration, though, of minutes. I know that Nuran. I heard from the fellow who gives me a lift to the airport and back that they have two E's. I thought there was only one, because I'd wished everyone a short while ago, only to learn we were now embarking on a second E. But not everyone keeps the first E. I'm really serious about, apparently there's a difference between Johannesburg and the Cape Town, and some use the horn and some use the calendar. So there we are. And so... it seems that there's another Eid on the go, and this is a very sacred, it's a very enjoyable, pleasurable time after fasting, and Nuran is busy celebrating that. That is why we are running short-staffed. All right, so just so that you are aware, and when you see her next, please wish her a happy Eid in passing now. All right, so where are the minutes? Have you got them? Mr. Hermans will double up as a distributor as well, very much like that repairer you had in mind, or purchaser in sale, or whatever. People doubling up in roles somehow. All right, now, may I make a suggestion to you? Members, do you have any comment at this stage? Yes, I think it's very difficult for us, isn't it? Honourable James, Honourable Hill Lewis. You know, Honourable Hill Lewis, I really meant it when I said, please look at that. I really meant that. Because when I spoke to Honourable Vandermeer, she was also of that same opinion. Yeah. Honourable James, any comments before we move into the minutes? Yes.
Chair, I have two questions to raise about the presentation. I may do so. The first one has to do with this is a question of clarification with reference to clause 4, where the response to the SACS about there being a conflict of interest when you asked the national regulator, and so on and so forth, and where you say you do not agree. I don't understand your explanation for why you don't agree, because their point is that the national regulator should not be involved in verifying instruments, rather should focus on supervising laboratories that obviously would develop the measurement standards, as well as the end users in the industry, and that could be anything from a clinic to something else, to ensure improved levels of service. And then you don't agree because you say there's market failure. I don't understand what that means. And then you go on to say that the industry should service the market fully. I don't understand what that means. And so I do not, in fact, would you please clarify your response to that question with a much greater level of precision than what you give here. That is my one issue. My second issue is a response to Woolworths about registration of products as opposed to registration of institutions. And if you read Clause 11, on page 7 it says, any importer, manufacturer, or person who offers for sale any prescribed measuring instrument, product, or service must register with. Now, clearly the implication is register what? You really need to clarify that. Must register, in terms of English, the clause would indicate that importer, manufacturer, or person should be registered. But I would just make very sure that that's clarified in law, because you then go on to say that with the CEO in the prescribed manner, which prescribed manner, where do you prescribe it? In what regulation? That is that you must remove any ambiguity, because I accept that the effort here is to say registration, not a product. Clearly that's ridiculous. But of the organization, would you please make it absolutely crystal clear in the way in which this is phrased? Those are my two points.
Any honourable Mackintosh?
Madam Chair, just one or two things. One thought is, if one put interests instead of interest, I think it makes that a bit clearer. I think your explanation is clear. You're wanting to represent the various interests in the bill at the moment, it's just an interest, not interests. And I think that may deal with the problem. I'm still not satisfied that we've dealt with what is a very practical problem. And the example was given by the South African Scale Council, this new baby that's arrived into the metrology world. On page 5 of their presentation, they gave an example of, for example, somebody has to travel to Springbok and so on. But perhaps on Friday you could mention that. The other point, Madam Chair, and I just want to affirm your view that this bill actually is very complicated. I was talking to somebody, I mean the people from geomatics, and increasingly all the geomatics is being done with satellite cameras. And you know now that a camera is defined by how many pixels it has. In fact, in KwaZulu-Natal, let you be warned if you're going there for Christmas, the cameras that are overhead are so good they can actually read your license disc on your windscreen, the date of it. So, but the point is, a pixel has to be measured.
Yes.
And it's, you know, these are just some of the challenges we have in a bill like.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that is why I felt strongly, Honourable Mackintosh, that some of the, the environmental changes, and scientifically speaking in particular, have advanced so rapidly that you can see when the first national, legal metrology bill or whatever was you had early on, was decades ago. And as you say, it took its line of thought from what was the Johannesburg Metro then. And I'm sure things have changed a lot in our environment. And some of the challenges, I have no doubt that everyone would want to meet. You know, a private sector in particular, always ready to, you know, take that step ahead into the unknown, pioneer these things. So it was, you know, I wouldn't like too much hesitation there. Otherwise, government could tip you at the post. So let's keep our minds open creatively. And I know that the person in question isn't here today. The person who made the submission, who was it? Newmark. But indeed, I'm sure he himself is familiar with the, you know, websites and so on, and he's busy browsing away to his heart's content on some of the issues that came out yesterday. And I just think we want to bring about a robust legal metrology bill. Over to you. The questions have been raised by some members, just preliminary ones, thank you. And then DDG, if you'd like to make any comments, you're welcome to. Yes, Chief Director.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The clause that I'll only respond to clause 4 from SACS, where we talk about market value. Currently, rural town where you have one or two possible clients are not well served by private sector players because it's not cost effective to engage those clients. It's areas that are metros on the whole that are actually well served by the private sector. So the regulator has to try to cover everybody. So the regulatory inspectors then are the ones that go out there and make sure that they try to cover the whole of South Africa. So that's what we are referring to, that if industry was able to cover the whole country, there won't be any need for the regulator to also do this work. Then the regulator could do what they suggest, which is that to supervise the industry. But it just so happens that can't happen now. Perhaps it's something that we could consider, that we must start moving out of various areas and focus on those areas that are not being served, geographic areas that are not being served. But it's not something that can be done immediately. That is the problem. And there are also areas or scope, I don't know how to describe it, but there are also some measurement areas that they are also not as cost effective. You can pick as a private player to serve those areas where your cost will be properly covered. So if you are going to check all the small pubs for trot measurement, you find that you are just running around but you're not making any money. So those areas then are left out, for instance. So yeah, that's what we try to talk to. We do note though that the industry, there could be an issue of competition between the regulator and the industry, because the regulator does not necessarily charge the people they serve the fees that are market related. So that could be a problem. So that is something that we do know that needs to be looked at again. That covers that question. I think my colleagues can come in to talk to clause 11.
From the NRCS, just in support with what the Chief Director is or trying to deliver expand on, the market failures or where there's no coverage from the verification laboratories, these areas like top measures, then also instrumentation on new technologies that is not covered by a verification laboratory, such as cryogenic liquids or metering systems. For instance, it's a new technical regulation that was released about 18 months ago, and set up a verification laboratory. These laboratories do not spring up overnight, or it's very difficult for a verification laboratory to be able to compete in the market where there's maybe two or three manufacturers in South Africa. So we as the regulator try to service those markets, not because we want to, because somebody must do the verification. It's not the intent of the regulator to be in competition. We take notice of what you're saying, and that is also our intent, is to regulate and not be a competitor in the market. I agree with your comments on the registration process. It is not to register every prepackage or type of prepackage. It's to get the information to gauge who are the market players in the industry, for us to see what is the coverage that is needed for our inspectorate and our services to provide a proper service to these registered companies.
Thank you very much, Honourable James.
Thank you very much for the responses. On the first one, let me say that when you say there's market failure, I understand now what you mean. And on the basis of you're saying that there's market failure, I mean, I'd like to know a bit more of the facts around that.
Yeah.
Where exactly is the market failure, and what's the scale of it, and so on and so forth. But you are saying that, and I accept that. You then give the state a greater role. And when you give the state a greater role, I would like to know how much you're going to spend. That is, I'd like to know what the regulatory, I want an RAA, no, regulatory assessment of that. Giving the state a greater role, it's going to cost more money, you need to appoint staff, how are you going to appoint staff? I mean, you know, it has massive consequences when you say that. But I have no sense sitting here, and I don't think anybody else on this committee has a sense of what the scale of that is. Is it a small change? Is it a small budget? Is it a small number of staff? I have no idea. So if you can just be a bit more detailed on this particular question, because it has major implications for the role of the state.
Yes, just before you respond, DTI, I just want to check. We've got somebody who raised that particular question from SACS. You're here with us this morning, aren't you? Sorry, the name again?
Werner Barnard.
Mr. Barnard, right. And so, Mr. Barnard, I just want you near a mic, please. There we are. Don't feel you compromising yourself with sitting by a politician. I see your colleague has got a sense of humour.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so now questions just been made, you've heard it and so on. Let us allow DTI to respond then, please. Was it yourself? Who wanted to come onto the floor just then? No one has. I saw a hand somewhere here. It wasn't yourself, DDG. Right. You've heard the engagement here. Can you, you recall what you may have said and contributed yesterday. Have you anything to add or comment to make, having heard the engagement so far?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Madam Chair, it's a very sensitive area. The regulator is always making statements, and we've discussed it with Mr. Marnovic and management and so on. The problem that we have is that it's a broad statement. The NRC is just saying we're not doing our work, and I will be blatant about it. We're saying they're not doing their part of the work, and that is regulating. Because at the moment, and DTI can listen clearly, they've got 26 inspectors. Half of the time those inspectors are busy with functions in the office. They have to do lots of things. I mean, they are understaffed. They have to do examinations. They have to do technical functions in the laboratories. And I want to ask Mr. Marnovic, how many of those 26 they've currently got is actually in the field 8 hours a day, 5 days a week to regulate the function? They say we do not get to the areas, but I doubt if they get to those areas as well. And I think it will be a much easier task if the regulator concentrates on the regulation and get to those rural areas and tell those people that they should have their stuff verified. The problem is the regulator goes there and maybe sees the top measure and then says to them, okay, we can verify it for you now. And again, yes, their charge might be 10 rand and our charge might be 100 rand because they agree their charge is not market related. And I feel we must, we should clarify that function, otherwise it's never going to work. It's taken 20 years to get to where we are now, and they claim it hasn't worked, and I think it will not work if it carries on in the same way.
Yeah, but now just a point here. There was an acknowledgement yesterday that the private sector itself couldn't get to the rural areas. You know, there was that acknowledgement. You see, I don't want pot calling the kettle black or the kettle calling the pot black. That's not going to help us. There was, that was a general acknowledgement. The other acknowledgement is up front that they don't have sufficient members of staff in this entity and unit. We, you know, and you yourself have stated this. It's not a disputed fact, and there should be more. The question would come to yourselves, you see. You're not servicing it. Is it because you don't have enough staff, or is it because people can't afford your rates? I don't know. These are questions I'm asking, you see. And I think let's share this information so together we get the right bill here. Honourable James?
I just want to suggest that we change the example to something less frivolous than a top measure. Let's look at blood pressure measurement instruments in the deep rural clinic. No, but I'm just saying this is not a frivolous issue.
No.
And if we need to develop a public-private partnership to get this right, we should do that. So we need an answer to the issue. And the answer lies both in the private sector and probably in the state. We have to get the mix right.
Yeah. And the whole point, we want to see, they tell us, you've told us it, but you haven't answered the question. Does the private sector have enough people? One. And two, is it a question of your fees? We don't know. Committee doesn't know. What is the challenge with the private sector? Because no one has prevented you from doing this. Thank you. Did you want to respond to that, Mr. Bernard?
Madam Chair, thank you. I think Honourable James's example might be a bit difficult one. I don't know if the NRCS agrees, because I don't think blood pressure monitors has been put in the legal metrology field yet.
I don't think he was sort of latching on to the word, but rather you're trying to say leave tots out of it, whether they little tots, you know, the babies and so on, or the other tots. It's leave tots out of it. Let's talk about all the other issues now. And we all know what we mean. We're adults.
Madam Chair, I think if we look at the scope of equipment in general, I will be talking in the weighing field, the other fields are the same. I mean, we all know that petrol pumps is scattered across the country. Scales is scattered across the country. Shoprites are on the border post. Small shops are on the border post. They everywhere in Springbok, right at the border gates, their shops and so on. So I think the spread of the equipment, we can say, is across the country. We do not have an easy country to travel in. I mean, it is long distances and that is expensive. But talking about enough people, there's 183 verification laboratories currently registered in South Africa. That is for both volume and mass. I think 70 odd of them is mass related. The rest is volume related. I cannot speak of the volume industry, but I think Mr. Marnovic will concur that there's a large amount of scales out there. ShopRite is talking in excess of 4,000 scales.
Now that's the point. So do you have enough people?
The post office alone is installing 4,500 new scales this month.
Now that's
the
point. You see, you're not answering the question.
Yes, no.
For one, a proposal has been made. You could get together. But just answer the question. It doesn't sound like you've got enough people, because we all know about all the scales that are coming out. So aren't enough people in the private sector either.
Madam Chair, no, I think there isn't enough people in the private sector either. I think the number of verification officers, though, is probably about 100 times more than what the NRCS currently has. So the problem in leaving the function with the NRCS will then definitely be that we won't get to to any of the equipment in the field. I think it will have to be a proper partnership between the NRCS and the private industry to solve the problem.
Well, that's what we're proposing. So we said, stop, you know, it's not this or that. The question is, as this government is always saying, it is neither, it is not either or, it's and, but, two together. The best way to do a tango as well. Now, we've now realized, and you have accepted, the private sector may have more people, or this, or that, but it too doesn't have sufficient to do the job. We have a shortage of the skills and people in the public and private sector. That is a reality. So let's get beyond this question now. You see, the next issue becomes charges and the competitive issue. Now, obviously, the first people to cry out if government put its charges up too much would be the private sector and the ordinary person. That's another reality. And on the other hand, the private sector also needs to ensure that it can compete with others, both here nationally, regionally, and internationally. We understand that. So, with your current charge or fee structure, are you saying with that you're unable to service? Even if you had all the people, with the current fee structure, you are unable to service rural, you know, all over. So let's not point fingers, because we already know the government's position. It's been explained. They don't have enough people. Their fees are too low. They need to make them higher. But what about your fee structure?
Madam Chair, I think there is no fixed fee structure in private industry. It's obviously for competitive reasons, it's fairly open. Everybody has their own fees. The fees are closely related. Hourly rates, transport rates, and so on is closely related. Obviously, the one hears what the other one's doing. I think the problem in the rural areas is not only fees. I think it's actually a visibility and a knowledge issue. I think most of the people out there, if you get to a small shop and you tell them your scale must be verified or your equipment or instrument must be verified, they will say, why? I think that is definitely one problem. And because then if you go to a rural area and all 100 people are knowledgeable there and they know because the regulator has told them, then it will be cost effective to go to rural areas and do all 100, but to do one is a problem.
I think that's certainly given us food for thought, that there's a need for this to be disseminated broadly to ensure that our people have this information, that there is consumer education, there is retailer, there is anyone, user information out there. Those who are required to get to comply with this are made aware, and from the smallest little entity to the biggest. And that is indeed what we'll have to see whether or not you're going to be doing as well, apart from the technical things. But I think we do appreciate you stepping to the fore there and having to, you know, contribute something on behalf of your many colleagues and so on in the industry. So where we are now, DTI has responded. Yourself, DDG.
No, thank you to yourself and the committee and everybody who made submissions. The presentation done by the colleagues today was obviously in the time available overnight. I think what we need to do now is to undertake that between the DTI, the colleagues in the NRCS, the state law advisors, we go away and come back on Friday morning with a much more detailed set of proposals for each and every issue that's been raised, including some of the complex policy questions around the relationship between the NRCS and the private sector, which is not an easy matter at all. Personally, I think the view expressed by Dr. James is the kind of right balance that one should be looking at. So, Madam Chair,
to DTI, the chief director in particular here, is that we absolutely require something that we've been getting from your other colleagues, and that is, you know, you've got your clause for etc. And you'll see from the system we worked out and developed together with DTI and of course our own legal advisors, Advocate Van der Merwe, you've got a kind of matrix with it here, very clearly. Where it is, the clause for, the page and the bill, you know, we've got a lot of work here, actually. The comment there, different people who may have said it, and your comment on the right. So it's the same information, if you like, but it's matrixed. So that when we work together on this now, we're actually, believe it or not, coming towards a very serious stage where the committee is now going to be making input, and we'll not want to be changing the documents all the time. We'll want the same matrix, as it were. And I know that, I think Advocate Van der Merwe, you're familiar with that matrix, but so are you too, DDG. I think you've seen one of those that was done with co-ops or with SEZ and the like. And that facilitates the process of oversight, am I right, from our side, much more so. And we're not working with 8 documents, you know, it's all there. So we would appreciate that. On the other hand, you know, we have a lot of work, and we will see you again on Friday. We are a little bit concerned about how far we will get on Friday. So, you know, at one stage I was saying to Mr. Hermans we should meet 8:30, but he was saying perhaps we could make it 8:45 to start sharp at 9, you know, that kind of thing. All right, so that would be Friday in terms of the BRRR. And we want all of the input, can I put it that way here, because it's going to be up here, Ms. Hurling is going to be here with Ms. Madalani, our researcher, and we're going to have to do inputs and changes and deliberate as we are doing it. Please, that's very important. And I know also we asked Honourable Hill Lewis if he had any thoughts on things. He's going to email that to Mr. Hermans, and that's also going to be on your desk as well. Okay. So on that note, I'm going to release yourselves if you so wish, and I'm now just going to speak to the committee on 3 things. We're going to go straight into the minutes, and what is going to happen here is we're not going to have the BRRR ready right now, and it isn't. We've also got some folks leaving just for a short while on committee work and coming back. So after the minutes, we'll have our team and then adjourn until 2:00. 2:45 for 2:00. 2:45. You'll have all of the BRRR here to go through. It's important that we get through that so that the team can put in the major changes, political changes, for Thursday morning. That's what they'll be. We're not meeting Thursday. I mean, they'll be working on it Thursday morning. And then at the same time, I've asked you to consider, but I'll take that, just check and see if you've been able to make up your mind about us meeting on Thursday. What time did we suggest, Mr. Herman? 2:30. Thursday, 2:30, 3:30, 4:30. Right, thank you. And we can then go on to the minutes. Has everyone got their package on minutes? Thank you. Oh, and by the way, there will be another venue for this afternoon. We're not sure. Mr. Herman's got a couple in mind, and please check your cell phones. Don't phone Tandy Switch. she is, she hasn't got a cell phone, but Mr. Herman, you may phone him. And he's now got a cell. After how many letters later? Yes. Okay. The wheels turn slowly with procurement. Right. The first set of minutes. I see not everyone has signed this, have they? Okay. February at the top, page 3. Yeah. putting the bill on the table, we said, well, sit across there. Should we address you as honourable? You are, you know, it's members have introduced the bill, and therefore you remain an honourable, no matter if you're introducing a bill or not. But there's no reason why you shouldn't be called honourable doctor. He needs to retain it. He is a doctor in his own right. We sometimes, of course, refer to the minister, you know, as Minister Dr. Robert Davies. So let's put those both titles. No, he has got two titles. Well, I've seen two. I don't know if you saw more than that. One area, you know, you have here, there it's fine, he's just the name is mentioned. And then on the top here, where it becomes honourable, it's rehearsal. Inform the committee that and Mr. M, do you see? That's what I'm saying. I think that's the one you spotted, isn't it? Just correct that. No, but I'm referring to this here. Okay. They remain honourable. You know, no one's just honourable at the moment in this committee, that's for sure. So let's keep them all, the honourables there. But that's, I think that's just something we keep in mind for the future. Yes, we're going to get someone with all the Hansards here to just propose adoption. Honourable McIntosh, are you proposing adoption?
I'm really happy to do
it. Yeah. Seconded by Honourable Khadebi. The 12th of September. We're all here. And page one. I wanted to ask you, I thought it was Advocate Hercules. Is it not? Well, here we've it just got the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, Mr. And last time he got upset about that too. It's Mr. Sapela who is not an advocate yet. Advocate Hercules and Law Advisor, Ms. Right, page two with a just a small correction which must be done. We do refer to Dr. James, or Dr. James, you see, Honourable Hill Lewis, under point three. I know you didn't put that on record, but I can lip read. And then you have the attendance register. And so do we all here. Someone wrote present for me, because I was, yes. Okay. Someone to propose adoption. Thank you, Honourable Salam. Yes, please. Thank you very much, Honourable Salam. Yes, can you sort that one out, please? The Ambrosini one, the Mister. You see, you know, I notice you're doing that, but in actual fact, you know, I don't know how you're supposed to refer to members. So the Hansard should say whatever is used here, and they don't. All right. Can we have someone to... Well, you proposed adoption, Honourable Salah. Seconded by? The 12th of September, Honourable McIntosh. The 19th of September. Page 1. Page 2. Well, apart from all the same sort of... corrections we've had before, like Hercules, make sure something goes in to remind people he's an advocate. Advocate Hercules. Right. Please make sure that I sign these registers, Mr. Herman.
Chairperson. I actually have quite a fundamental issue to raise with the minutes, and I just want to know when you'd like me to raise it, now or at the end, with regards to the Hansard.
Well, Well, unless it's going to require an amendment, I'd like to pass them and then raise it. If it requires an amendment, no. All right. Can we propose the adoption of these minutes and then deal with all these issues of style afterwards and other issues? Yes. Someone to propose. Thank you, Honourable McIntosh, seconded by Honourable Maivi. Before you do come in, and then I'm going to ask for the... Oh, hang on, let's get through all the minutes, because it'll have the same point. 20th of September, we're all present again. I'm not... If I see Hercules there again as Mr., can you check all our minutes? All our minutes. Because he's sent in this complaint now. Please, 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 with him. Leave the misters around the place, put in the doctors, professors, the advocates, and everything else. Right, page one. Page two. Page three. Page four. Can we have someone to adopt the minutes, please? I mean, yes. Propose the adoption, Honourable Kadebe, seconded by someone put you in the post. I don't know if it was Honourable Yul Lewis, right? Okay. Now, all of the minutes for me have got Hansard attached. We understand that. And there's just one thing, though, apart from the little corrections we've made, like people's titles they've earned through 3 years or 10 years or whatever. Give it to them, all right? And then we refer to people as honourable, but it's not necessarily honourable in the minutes, per se. You know, people are mistered all over. Mr. So-and-so, Mr. this, Miss so-and-so, in order of the minutes. However, when it comes to the substance, or the content, can I put it that way, one of these you would have seen had... Well, I see they've all got these resolutions. Well, some of them have, some of them don't. I think it becomes very important, not where we've done opening, adoption, and the input, is to, after deliberations per se, what is it? Have we taken a position? In some cases, we've not taken a resolution, but we've taken a position. And what is that position? And that's not always noted. I see the resolutions are noted, which is very important. The other issue as well, which I have raised before, is using the top one I happen to have in front of me, which is the 10. We talk here about the input of the Department of Trade and Industry. It's a lotteries amendment bill. What else was on the agenda that day? Was it only the lotteries amendment? But when the others have come, it is very useful for us to get two lines or three. You see, when someone picks this up and there's no Hansard, it's very difficult to know which way things went. Now, I never say I never went to that meeting. As a matter of fact, I didn't, I see. No, no, I'm just saying, no, I haven't. It happens to be the top one, and by chance now I'm referring to it. Not because I... picked it up deliberately. It's a random, it's the top one. And I'm saying I wasn't there that day. Now, I wanted to find out what happened. Short of, and I didn't call you immediately and I was away for a while, I'd look at that, but it wouldn't tell me too much. And I know you're really under the whip, but where we can, it would be very helpful just to put a couple of the issues in. That's my only. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. It's a very important issue with regards to the Lotteries Amendment Bill, Chair. You'll recall that on the final day of our consideration of that bill, the DDG and Thuli was not able to be present.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a debate about the meaning of Section 13A sub 4,
yes.
Which I understood exempted the minister from issuing a request for proposals when he had decided to license an organ of state. And that was my understanding from something that Mr. Thuli had said in a previous meeting. but because she was not there, she was not able to clarify, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's actually it's a serious problem that the department is not there on the final day that a bill is being considered. But that aside, I said to you that I'd go back and check the Hansard. Now, obviously, we've just received these minutes, so I have not had...
Well, not on the one.
Which
date
do you refer to? No, well, you see, I can't recall the exact date on which she made that comment. So I have to go and read these Hansards in detail to find it. But Chair, if I may just finish. Last week, DDG and Thule was in our meeting when we dealt with some other subject matter, and I checked that with her, and she said that in fact that was her meaning. That the minister should be exempted from issuing a RFP. But that was not the understanding of the committee, because you will recall when I raised that on the last day, the rest of the committee said, no, I've got the incorrect understanding. And I said, well, on that basis, I'm happy to proceed. But that was not my understanding. But, Chair, it turns out that indeed my understanding was correct and the understanding of the committee was incorrect. Now we sit with
but I'm going to allow you to continue. We've got the Hansard now.
Mm.
That was on the 11th. Because it says here, final consideration. That's what it's saying. It says here, formal consideration, deliberations. Mr. Hermans, for a moment in time, I want to get the final deliberation on the lotteries of October. So do we have those? We don't have it. Because you see what I think I said to you, but you're going to be allowed to continue. As I said, I want the Hansard. You also agreed we must get this. And this is the criticism I've had about Hansard, that we're getting the Hansard too late. Where is the Hansard? Yeah, we actually should have had it within a week. And it was on the 2nd, and today is the 15th. That is a problem, but continue.
The challenge is this, Chair, and I have sympathy for the Secretary, because the difficulty actually arose out of the fact that the department was not in the meeting for the formal consideration of the bill, which is a problem. But that notwithstanding, I went into that a final consideration with an understanding that 13A4 exempted the minister, and that was the correct understanding because I've confirmed it with the DDG. But the committee had a different understanding, so we've now passed that clause and adopted that bill with an incorrect understanding of what that clause means or what the department intended to mean. Now I don't know what we do about that, Chair, because it's a problem for me, and I submit that it's a problem for this committee to pass a clause which we had an incorrect understanding of.
Well, put it this way, as you say, and I'm not too sure now, I want to clarify something, I was not at that meeting last week, and I would have to ask the whip about this, that at that meeting last week, what I can ask you publicly, was this a public engagement in the committee?
Was
this question raised in the committee? I don't know. I wasn't there.
No, you were there. When we adopted the bill, you were there.
No, last week. You said you have spoken.
I don't know when you spoke.
Yeah.
That was over tea last week. I asked her, I showed her the clause. I said, you weren't here for the adoption. I want to know what you mean by this clause.
Right.
And she set it up to me, and that's as I told it to you now.
Unfortunately, that was a private engagement. That's why I've just asked you. I'm not aware of this at all. It was not reported to me by the whip, who did a handover, as it were. So it has not been explained in committee. It is a process, a private personal process. I have a number of private personal processes between the minister and myself, which I can't just impose on the committee. Because in the committee, we take a committee decision and not a Joan Phubbs decision. And the same applies whether these things are discussed in the ANC at a study group. That is not the decision of the committee. And you will notice that I very often, when we have to take a serious decision as a chair, I refer to the whip to give me the ANC's position. Because we have to have it. Now, and I'm trying, you know, I do hear where you're coming from, because you've had this personal engagement. You have had it, no one else has had it. Do you follow what I'm saying? It occurred out of committee. It's not a process of this committee. And therefore, if I, and I'm giving you a hypothetical case, which won't happen, but if you bring back, if I have a private engagement with the minister in his office, or I have one in my office, just to give you an example, or with the DG, who says XYZ to me, and then it comes to committee, he may not say the same thing. Now, I'm just giving you those facts. I'm trying to be quite pragmatic and realistic with all of you. Do you follow what I'm saying? So, said here, said here. So, because this did not happen in committee, you've raised it in committee now, this is recorded, what I'm saying, and as I say, I'm using hypothetical cases, but the procedure in Parliament is that it would have had to have been raised here. Do you follow? What does happen, and that is why I insist that parties check the final report. I will not sign it off before, and I waited 2 days. I did not sign it off, because we did have a situation where a member of the committee was of the opinion that what he had said had been on Hansard, was not on Hansard. It was after him and took place up at the desk, like in a tea break or whatever. Nevertheless, because this was raised before it hit the ATC, you follow the process, and it was raised with the Speaker,